Well, first, I want to, I know that we're going through the big three. That's what this is called. We have gone through multiple books. I mean, we're all the way up to now the prophets, or we are together all the way up to the prophets now. Jeff started us off with one of the big ones last week. But before we jump into that and we cover Jeremiah, Ezekiel, and Daniel today, one of the things that I personally wanted to do was really just kind of give an introduction to myself and my family, as well as just kind of give you some perspective, if you will, of how grateful we are. We don't just see this as an opportunity, nor do we see this as, and that, by this I mean like coming to grace. We don't just see this as an opportunity, nor do we see this as kind of a step in the right direction, and we don't know where this is going to end. Pretty much from the moment that we started meeting you guys, it was, this is it. This is where we're going. And you guys have accepted us from quite literally day one. In fact, before day one, because when we came up here last July, we had no idea what was going on. And you guys had already accepted us before we had any idea what was going on. Absolutely. And so that's, honestly, I think it's a really good transition into these big three guys, into saying, hey, I don't know what is going on. I don't know where God is taking us. I don't know why these things are happening, nor do I know why we're leaving our land. Right? I have no idea why I'm leaving. And to put this in perspective, and I'll give you a little history on myself, just a little bit. You guys can obviously, I'm an open book. If you haven't already could tell, I would be happy to sit with anybody and share my testimony. And I don't just mean my religious or spiritual testimony. I mean the journey that I've been on up until me being 34 years old and standing in front of you right now. I would be happy to tell you my turns and my dips and the roller coaster that has been my last couple years, all 34 of them. But that being said, I was born and raised in Columbia, Missouri. I moved to South Missouri for college for a little while, and then I moved way south, and I moved to Brazil. And when I moved to Brazil, for about a year of my life, that's where I met my wife. And we came back to the States, we came back to my hometown, and that's where I thought we were gonna start planting roots, right? That's where I thought our future was. And until, quite literally, we had this moment about a year ago, where we had no idea why God was bringing us, where he was bringing us. We had no idea the timing and why it was that timing. But one thing I can tell you is that any time we began to close our hands and say, God, I don't understand, and I don't want to let go of this, he would either do one of two things. He would either graciously ask us to release, or he would smack our hand. And both times we would release, and both times showed us that this is exactly where we needed to be. And you guys, honestly, I'm not going to lie, we are looking forward to spending time with you guys, not bringing you answers, not hopefully just, we are the future. That's not it. My hope is that we can come in and just be with you guys, that we can seek him together. And as we do that, my prayer is that we can lead one another, that I can hopefully, with whatever God is going to grace me with, as Jeremiah says, you know, I don't know why you've asked me to do this. I'm too young. My prayer is that he gives me the words to say when he needs to, and that my prayer is that I also have the ears to listen when I need to. And so that's the first thing straight out is my prayer is that as we sit across the table from one another, it's not that I have any kind of more status or any of those pieces, but rather we're just two guys or two gals, or my wife would be happy to say, I'm sure, the same thing, sitting across the table from one another, searching him, seeking him. So that being said, let's dive in, and I want to kind of give you an overview recap Now, I know that you guys have been here for every one of the sermons up until this time, but I haven't. And so I want to do it for myself, and you guys can just kind of tarry along with me. But I want to kind of give you a foundation piece to where we're headed next. And where we're going into is the three, I'm going to call them the major prophets. Obviously, Isaiah is a pretty big one. But he kind of stands alone. So Jeff kind of got the standalone huge one, and then I'm going to take the younger brothers of him, and then next week we're going to take the cousins. So all right. So that being said, we're going to start with what Don started with way back when, if you can remember that far back, literally with the beginnings. And Don covered the beginning history books of the Bible, right? Genesis all the way up until 1 and 2 Kings. Right, so that was what Don had covered. And in just a minute, and I see that they're already up there. Are they already up there? Yeah, they are already up there. I was going to have you guys recite these. So you can thank, was that you? You can thank Lisa for this, for the help, okay? Don't thank me, thank Lisa for this help, okay? So I was going to have you guys recite this after I kind of covered all of them. But Don covered the beginnings of the history. Nick wrapped it up. And he wrapped up the last part of the histories. Aaron started with Job, and then Gary took it straight from there, and he did Psalms and the Song of Solomon and all of the poetry books, right? So he wrapped up the poetry books. Aaron started them. And then we had Jeff coming in, and man, you got one book, but it was a beast of a book. So you had Isaiah. So that's where we are up until this point. So far, what we should have covered, if after today, is 27 books. So you guys should have had 23 books covered, which, by the way, it's the end of February. That's incredible, okay? You guys have gone through 23 books of the Bible, and it's not even March, okay? So I am so excited for you guys that within the next couple of months, you're going to be done with the entire Bible. You will have literally gotten a snapshot of Jesus' love letter to you guys. And if you can just soak that in, it's so beautiful. Rather than just taking kind of like dipping your toe in, you are going to have all 66 books by the end of this. But I do want you to go ahead, and if you will, because you've done it almost every other week, I want you guys to say the books together, because you guys should be memorizing it, and I'm going to do it with you, all right? Can we put it back up, or do you want to not put it back up? Not put it back up. So don't think, Lisa. Okay, we're not going to put it back up. You had your chance to look at it. It was one of those pictures where what did you see? All right? Okay, so we're going to start with Genesis, and then I'm just going to let you guys go. So I'll start you off, and then you guys go until I hear quiet, and then I'll finish it. All right? Genesis. You're taking it all the way through. All right, so you don't have to do it next week. That's what we'll say. All right? So starting with this week, though, we're actually going to cover four books today, since one was also authored by one of the prophets that we're going to be covering, which is Lamentations. So I'm going to go ahead and just kind of give a generic overview of Lamentations, like literally a 60-second overview of Lamentations, and then we're going to dive into each one of these prophets individually. Lamentations, so Jeremiah was known, right? We all have nicknames. Some of us wish we had different nicknames, but we all have nicknames, and one of the nicknames that Jeremiah holds to is the weeping prophet, right? He was the prophet to whom lamented. He wept over his nation. He wept over his people, and as he was weeping over his people, obviously, I mean, I don't know if I was just up here crying my eyes out, I would assume that you guys would notice that, and so he was known for that. He was known for weeping for his people. And justly so, he also wrote a book called Lamentations, right? An opportunity for us to see just how much that guy truthfully cared for his people. Even when everything felt like it was going wrong, even when it felt like nobody was listening to him, even when it felt like he was the only one that was standing and bridging the gap, his cry was the same cry that you're going to see. Honestly, the way that I would see it is the way that I would cry for my children. It's God, just please, even though they don't understand, just help me to help them understand. Give me the strength to help them understand. Right? Give me just one more day. Give me one more day so that I can come and just be with them, so that I can honestly help them understand who you are. And you're going to see that's Lamentations. Pretty much, it's just a really big book of that. Right? Give me another day. Let them see who you are. Let them see you through me. Let them just see. However, one of the things that we're going to see, and now we're going to dive into this, is that all three of these guys, although they lived at the same time, they led at different times. So although they lived literally at the same time throughout history, they actually led different times, which is why we're going to do them in this order, right? So we're going to do Jeremiah, Ezekiel, and then Daniel went a little further, right? And you're going to have the guys underneath them. This is a snapshot of the prophets as well as the kings that you're going to see, and then the timeline that's there. So you're going to see Lamentations was written around 660, 650, depending on who you ask, 660, 650 BC, and that would have been around the same time that Jeremiah would have been leading. The next part to this is you're going to see Ezekiel, right? You're going to see Ezekiel, and I'm just going to give you a generic overview of each one of these guys, and then we're going to dive into each one. Ezekiel would have been a guy who each one of them were leading during exile, right? So you're going to have Ezekiel leading during exile, and while he's leading during exile, he does the same thing. His hope is that God can speak through him. Now, what's going to be this common thread that you're going to see from Jeremiah, Ezekiel, and Daniel is that each one of them are told, nobody's going to be listening to you. The people are all going to reject me. And it's like, imagine being given like a job, right? Which honestly, imagine being a parent, okay? And they're like, here's what's going to happen. Okay, it's going to be the best times of your life. And you're like, okay, what does it mean? It means that you're going to have this little tiny human that won't trust you, right? You're going to have to teach them absolutely everything, and they're not going to want to learn it, right? And you're going to love them. It's like, okay, wait, hold. Can you go back to the beginning of that? You want me to try and like love a little tiny human that isn't going to be listening to me, acknowledging me, wanting to learn? I'm going to have to force them to learn. In fact, you want me to discipline this little tiny human? Like that just, and you're going to say that the umbrella of that is love? That it's going to feel like I'm forcing them to do something? That's love? And what's interesting is that you're going to see Jeremiah, Ezekiel, and Daniel showing a form of love as prophets, as they look forward to a nation who doesn't want to learn from them, doesn't want to listen to them, doesn't want to learn anything that they're saying. And in fact, so much so that they're literally saying, and the things that you're going to be talking about, none of them are going to come to pass during your life. So it's like, man, right? But every single one of them, as they were moving forward, continued to say, God is worth it. God is worth it. So I'm going to tell you, and just straight out of the gate, it's honestly really difficult sometimes, especially as Christians or Christ followers, to feel like, man, nobody's listening. It feels like the world is just on its head. It feels like, why are we trying to do this? And you know what we have a tendency to do is the same tendency that we all have to do, and that is just a selfish response. And I'm not going to lie, I'm looking in the mirror and saying the same kind of selfish response. Our tendency is to say, I'm just going to hate them. I'm going to turn my back on them. Let's shut our doors and make sure that it's us and no more. And let's talk and sing and hang out together. At least we can kind of be an echo chamber for ourselves, and we can have these good, warm, but fuzzy feelings for ourselves. And at least we are agreeable. We can teach one another. And yet that's not what we were called to do. We weren't called to come in here and close the doors and talk with each other and make each other feel good. That's not what we were called to do. We were called to do something incredibly difficult. And I'm telling you now, it's seemingly impossible. And the success that you're going to see is not this side most of the time. The success that you're going to see is not going to come on this side of the world. The success that you're going to see is when you finally get where you should be aiming. And my prayer for you guys and for myself is that that's the mission that we continue to put one step forward to. Not temporary success or temporary comfort, but that we can put one step forward, even though we may not feel like we're the right person or that we have enough information or that we have enough knowledge or enough degrees or enough titles or whatever you want to put on it. We weren't called to have titles or degrees. We weren't called to have those positions. What we were called to do is make disciples, and that's going to be the challenge at the end. And I hope that at the end of this, we can take from these three main prophets that huge applicational call. But I want to go ahead and break down Daniel, and then we're going to jump into each one. Daniel operated, because he was actually one of the guys where, if you were going to see Daniel, he was one of the guys who really kind of operated with three different rulers, kings, right? He operated, it was a lot changed for him, except for one thing in his focus, and that was his focus on God. So he, during this time, you're going to see that there was actually a lot of stuff that you're going to remember, maybe remember from the Old Testament or have heard about the Old Testament. And it actually all happened with Daniel. So one of the first one was, is with King Nebuchadnezzar, right? So as he's in Babylon, they're in exile to Babylon. He's with King Nebuchadnezzar, and he has a dream. The king has a dream, and he calls in these guys, and none of them can describe what this dream means, right? It's this huge tower, and it starts out, and it's these different layers, and none of them can describe what this actually looks like. So Daniel comes in, and he actually begins to describe to him what this looks like. That's under King Nebuchadnezzar. It's this dream of an idol tower. Then you have Belshazzar, or, well, you can pronounce it however you like. That's how I'm going to pronounce it, right? Say it with confidence. Belshazzar, right? And that is the writing on the wall, right? It's actually the term. So it's found in Daniel. We're going to find in Daniel this writing on the wall. In fact, we still to this day use this term, right? The writing is on the wall. That's actually where it came from. So when we say the writing is on the wall, that's what it means. So you're going to see that during this time, as Daniel is under Belshazzar, you're going to see that this literal hand comes in and writes on the wall exactly what's going to be happening to Babylon during this exile. Then there's a third king, and this is the one that most of you will probably most likely know about Daniel. King Darius is the one who was, I'm not going to say tricked into, because if you're selfish, you can't be tricked into loving yourself, but he was definitely aided and abetted into making a law that these guys were trying to imprison Daniel with. Right, his wise guys or his council encouraged King Darius to write this law that was going to make it so that they could only pray to or acknowledge King Darius as king, right? No one else, that they couldn't pray to anyone else, that they couldn't worship anyone else, and that's not what Daniel did. Daniel, if you're going to see Daniel from day one thing that never changed with Daniel was his complete concrete faith and worship, trust and obedience to God, whether he was in exile or whether he was home. And this is where you're going to see Daniel in the lion's den. He was thrown into a lion's den. And if you read that passage, you're going to see that it says that God shut the mouths of the lions. Now, I've been told numerous times before that as you read Daniel in the lion's den, you're going to see, you know, okay, if we have faith or if we acknowledge Jesus or if we follow Jesus and we truthfully have that heart, then he's going to shut the mouths of the lions, right? He's going to protect us no matter what we do. We can walk out in front of everybody. We can shout praise to him and that he's going to protect us no matter what. And everybody turns back to Daniel and the lion. He'll shut the mouths of the lions. But I'm going to tell you, you turn to the first century church, and most of the time, I've heard this before, the lions ate. The lions' mouths were not shut. So what I'm asking you to do is not to acknowledge Jesus, be thrown into a lion's den, and just assume that everything is going to be great. And I'm not talking about a literal lion's den. Talking about being thrown into the world and just assuming that everything is going to be great. Because 9 times out of 10, it most likely won't be. But I'm still going to tell you it's worth it. I'm still going to tell you that even if all of those things don't come to pass like it did for Daniel, it's still worth it. Because Jesus is still who he says he is. And he still commanded us to do what we were commissioned to do. And we aren't supposed to say, well, I will as long as you shut the mouths of the lions, or I will as long as you protect me, or I will as long as. It's just, I will. Whatever comes, whatever the cost, I will. Period. And we're going to see that with these guys. So now let's jump in. So you're going to see Jeremiah, and one of the things that we're going to see from here is the setup to Jeremiah is that Jeremiah pronounced God's judgment upon the people of his time for their wickedness. So it's not that he simply went into Babylon and decided to tell the Babylonian people how bad they were. He was also instructed to go to his own people and acknowledge their wickedness and bring their own judgment to his own people while he was also in exile. Imagine this. So you're away from home, and you're like, well, I just wish that I could have one creature comfort, right? One person who understands me. And instead, God's like, okay, the people that you actually get along with, the people that you agree with, you're going to go up and you're going to tell them my judgment on them, as well as being in captivity, being away from home. This guy was a man on an island. Of course he was a weeping prophet. He had nothing left to do. Like, I mean, seriously, the only thing he had to be happy for was that God was God. That was it. His people turned their back on him. He's in exile. He doesn't have his home. His message is not a message of health, wealth, and happiness. This is absolutely going to be great. If you turn to Jesus, it's going to be great, right? It's not his message. His message was judgment and judging their wickedness and the exile itself. And then he turns and he's like, yeah, and then there's the Babylonians, right? So there's those guys that I also have to talk to, right? That's what we're going to see straight out of the gate with Jeremiah. However, as we read today in the verses, one of the things that we're going to see from that is that even he felt like he was too young, right? In fact, the verses that we're going to read, I'm going to try and reread, I'll probably butcher it a little bit, is found in Jeremiah chapter 1, verses 7 through 10. If you guys want to turn there, Jeremiah chapter 1, 7 through 10. I'm reading straight out of the NIV right now. It says, "But the Lord said to me, 'Do not say I am too young. You must go to everyone I send you to and say whatever I command you to. Do not be afraid of them, for I am with you and will rescue you,' declares the Lord. Then the Lord reached out his hand and he touched my mouth and he said, 'I have put my words in your mouth. See, today I appoint you over the nations and the kingdoms to uproot and tear down, to destroy and overthrow, to build and to plant.'" So at the very beginning, we can already see Jeremiah's number one complaint that probably would have happened. Now, it probably was more here than uttered, and that was, you picked the wrong guy. Could it be anybody else? Can I go help somebody do this? Can I be the assistant to the one who does this, right? Or can I have four other guys come with me? Or can I have 10 other guys come with me? Can you at least tell me that like half of them are going to listen? Right? I'm too young. They're not going to listen to me. Some of these people are half my, or double my age. Like, I'm going to come up and I'm going to be like, hey, man, you really shouldn't be doing that. And you're going to be like, get away from it, kid. Right? Like, man, this is just a fun-filled life. And yet, the thing that we're going to see is the setup to Jeremiah is that he was told that the people would be stubborn. Sound like the world. He was informed that the people would not follow. Sounds like the world. He was told he was going to be rejected, hated, mocked, imprisoned, and ignored. Sounds like the world. He was told that he was going to be left lonely and depressed if he continued to follow. Sounds like the world. Said that he would be ransacked, desecrated, and destroyed. Man, this is just a beautiful, like, sign me up, right? Like, done. How many are going to go with me? Zero? Great. I'd love to do this alone, right? Not a single convert. Yes, right? And he would be left with unending sadness. Sweet. And yet, you're going to see, here's the beautiful part, you're going to see, there's two times in the New Testament when people ask two different guys who they are. One is when the Levites come and ask John the Baptist, who can we say you are? Some say, or he comes and he says, hey, are you the Messiah? Now he interrupts and he says, I'm not the Messiah, right? This is found in John chapter 1. Some say that you are, or are you the Messiah? He says, I'm not the Messiah. He interrupts him. I'm not that guy. Let me just stop you right there. I'm not the Messiah. Okay, well then, are you Elijah? Right? There's one of the guys. No, I'm not that guy. Are you the prophet talking about Deuteronomy, Genesis area, right? Are you that guy? No, that's not the guy that I am. I'm not the prophet that Moses talked about. Then who are you? Right? Who are you? And he says, I'm a voice crying out in the wilderness, right? So you're going to see that list, Messiah, Elijah, the prophet. Jesus, standing in Caesarea Philippi, asks his disciples, and he says, hey, who do the people say that I am? Right? He's standing with his guys, who he's been with for a year and a half, 2 years, and he says, hey, who do the people say that I am? And they say, some say you are, I've already given you the list, Elijah, right? Some say you are the prophet. And then they add this random person into the list. Some say that you're Jeremiah. It's like, wait a minute, what? Why would Jesus be called Jeremiah? And the reason is because Jesus' heart broke from day one. Because he knew that even coming to the end, no one would understand. He knew, coming into this, that no one was going to understand who he was. Even at the end, they're arguing, who gets to sit next with you in heaven? Even at the end, they're arguing, who's going to take on the mantle? Even at the end, Peter, in that moment, by the way, says, hey, Jesus, you don't have to do any of this. You don't have to do any of what you're talking about. Nobody would understand this guy. He was left alone, exiled from his land. And he lamented and wept, mourned for his people to understand God's love. So we're going to get to see that Jeremiah actually, even though he's kind of a minor-ish prophet, he's actually talked about in the New Testament because that's who they thought Jesus was. That's the heart of Jeremiah. Now, if I can encourage you guys, there's actually a quote. Okay, so there's a quote from C.S. Lewis. It says, I need Christ, not something that resembles Christ. In your life, and I'm going to give you guys just a little bit of time at your own table, just for a little bit, and I want you guys to discuss this, okay? In your life, it says, I need Christ, not something that resembles him. Here's the question that I want you guys to just talk for a little bit at your table. Do you believe that you know God? Now, if not, that's an okay question. You can, if that's too much, you can hold that answer to yourself. I want you to kind of mull that over on your own. Do you believe that you truthfully know God? But the follow-up question is something that I really want you to wrestle with on your own. Or do you just talk and worship him and learn about him? Do you just come in here and sing songs, hear teachings, and sit in a building that should be named after him? Or have you actually feel like you've been introduced to him? Or have you just been introduced to people that know him? So I want you to think about that question as the question that I really want you guys to talk about is do you really know, or do you really know God, or do you just think you know God? And to set that up, so these are the questions that I want you to talk about. What effort have you been making to get to know God and his plans for your life? So what effort have you been making? What effort have you been making to get to know God and his plans for your life? And then the secondary follow-up question to this, and this is one that I really hope that the people at your table, if they can't answer, find somebody that can, please. There are leaders in this church that I guarantee you the main thing that they would want to do more than anything else is to introduce you to Jesus. I promise. It's the most important thing that they have going on. If you want to build a relationship, this is the follow-up. If you want to build a relationship with someone, okay, so this is the question that you guys should really be discussing. If you were wanting to build a relationship with someone, what are the things that you actually are going to do? So let's hypothetically speaking say, hey, I wanted to get to know the church I'm about to move to. or you are wanting to get to know my family, what are some of the things that you would do to set that up? And then are you doing those same things with God? Are you setting aside time, those priorities in your own life to actually get to know him? To truthfully get to know him? Or are you just passively waiting and saying, he's never revealed himself to me. He's never shown up. All right, I'm going to give you guys a couple minutes to just kind of discuss those two. What efforts have you been making to get to know God? And then what parts in your own relationship, so what things in your own relationship, what are some details that you would want to build a relationship with somebody else? Go for it. All right, I don't want to break this up. Here's what I'm going to promise, okay? At the end of today, just make sure to go get your kiddos. But at the end of today, keep this conversation going, all right? You don't just have these short 3 or 4 minutes that I gave you. You can keep this conversation going throughout the week, and I hope that you can keep this conversation going in your house. And maybe if you're a journaler, write these things down. Right? Write down ideas as to how you can continue to build a personal relationship with Jesus, and are you actually doing it? And are you actually doing it? Which leads me to the first one. So if you're taking notes with us and you're following along on the outline, under Jeremiah, a prophet is a student of who God is. So I hope that you will spend your time learning who he is, not just thinking you know it all. Not just thinking that you can come into this building or thinking that you've been in church your whole life or that you've been a part of it and you know everything, right? There's not a thing that I don't know. There's not a thing that I need to change. It's all the world. The world needs to change. If the world would just change, a prophet is a student of God. A disciple literally means student. So I'm going to lay this on top of you guys and on top of myself and say that a disciple is also a student of God, all right? So now we're going to jump into Ezekiel. Ezekiel, we're going to read 2 verses. We're going to read Ezekiel chapter 1, verse 1. And then we're going to read Ezekiel chapter 1, verse 28. And yes, there are a lot of verses in between there. I'm just not going to read them all. If you would like to, please feel free on your own time to read all of the verses that are in between them. I just want to sandwich who Ezekiel was in chapter 1. In my 13th year, in the 4th month, on the 5th day, while I was among the exiles at the Kebar River, the heavens were opened, and I saw visions of God. Now, jumping down to verse 28. Like the appearances of a rainbow in the clouds on a rainy day, so was the radiance around him. This was the appearance of the likeness of the glory of the Lord. When I saw it, I fell on my face, and I heard the voice of the one who was speaking. So I want to go ahead and give you a preface as to who Ezekiel was. Ezekiel was just a normal dude, all right? He was just a normal guy just like us. I mean, there was nothing super spectacular about Ezekiel. Ezekiel was just a normal guy. He wasn't one that would have come from huge accolades. He was just a guy. So that's number one, straight out of the gate. There wasn't anything that was super, super special about him, nor was there anything that was really superficial about him. Right? The only thing that was truthfully about Ezekiel was that there was something supernatural that was in him, right? That was with him. His mission was supernatural from the standpoint of who he spoke about, right? And we're going to see that in the first chapter of Ezekiel, what we just read. He was told, now I'm going to give you the laundry list of things that he was told and his mission, right? It's almost like Mission Impossible if you choose to accept this. He was told that he would be with the people who had no drive or vision. Awesome. He would have to continue to repeat the same message over and over and over again. His message would not only be one, or would not be one of comfort, but of critique. Awesome, right? The people listening would be extremely apathetic, and not a single person would make a difference. Sound a lot like Jeremiah. Man, these guys are just like, whoa, right? Okay, so these are the guys who are saying, but to God be the glory. I fell on my face and I worshiped God. However, this was the setup to them. Right? Jeremiah saying, there is not a single guy I would choose to follow but God. And this is the mission that they're on. Ezekiel, I fell on my face and I worshiped the Lord God. And this was the mission that they were on. It wasn't, okay, I fell on my face and I worshiped God because my life was comfortable. Everything around me was fantastic. People were just coming in droves to get to know God. It was the opposite. The message that they were saying was repeated over and over and over. The message that they were saying was one of critique, right? And not critical in the sense of, I'm awesome, you're not, in the sense of, we are not awesome, okay? We need to change our ways. We need to refocus back to God. And nobody was listening. Everyone was apathetic as he was going through. As we get into this, we're going to see that there was one thing that Ezekiel always had a response with. His response was one that he was always able to pose a challenge to the people. Okay, so now think about that. If nobody was listening to me, it would be very difficult for me to have thought enough to be able to say, I'm going to challenge you to do this. Normally when things go right or when things go great or when things are going my way, that's when I can come up with a good challenge and everybody can jump on board and I can spearhead that message. But when everyone is apathetic and nobody cares and everybody is critical and everybody not listening to what you're saying, okay, well, now I'm going to challenge you guys. I'm going to challenge you guys to rise up and do something that you've never done before. And by the way, you're not going to do it this time. And every time Ezekiel did that, he would always pose this challenge, meaning that he would always, even though he almost knew for a fact nobody's ever going to listen to him, he still said, I'm going to try. Because I wasn't commanded that my success was seen with how many people turn. My success is seen in how I live my life and the mission and the message that I deliver. Our success is not seen by how many people come to Christ because of me. It's what I do with the life that Christ gave me. He gave me a message, he gave me an example, and he gave me a model. It's not my job to be successful with his model and his success. It's my job to do what he told me to do, to follow him. Which we would say, and this is the second one on your outline, Ezekiel is a prophet. A prophet is a symbol of who God is. You can also say a disciple should be a symbol of who God is. Which, speaking of a symbol, we actually have a term for that. It's called a status symbol, right? I'm going to guarantee you our teams are probably not going to be the same yet, okay? I'm coming from Missouri. I'm a Chiefs fan, diehard. I was before they were winning, okay? I promise. Yeah, before they were winning, I used to root for them, all right? Same with the Royals, and they're still not winning, okay? And I love those sports, right? In fact, if you ever take me or I go to a sporting event that is Chiefs or Royals, I'm going to guarantee you I'm going to have the hat, I'm going to have the shirt, I'm going to have the rally rag, I'm going to have it all, okay? Because what am I? I'm a fan, right? I'm a fan. And where am I going? I'm going to the game. This is the one time where my guys are all doing their thing and I get to watch it and I get to be a part of it and I get to cheer them on. Right? So what am I? I would be a symbol of that team, right? So now let's look at the life that we were given with Jesus. I'm not going to call myself a fanboy of Jesus, okay? It's not what I'm talking about. But what I should be saying is that whenever he's doing his thing, I should be a part of it. My desire should be to be a part of it. And I shouldn't be the one who doesn't look like I'm any part of it. Right? I definitely, when the Chiefs play the Raiders, I'm definitely not going to be wearing Raiders garb and rooting for the Chiefs. That's just not going to happen. Or when they're playing the Broncos, definitely not going to do that either. Right? You have your own teams. You have your own. I agreed. Right? Right? It's just not going to happen. You're not going to see me walk in with the opponent's garb on and I'm rooting for the other team. It's not going to happen. Which, what that looks like is I'm going to be wearing, or I'm going to be acting like my life should be a reflection of what I am symbolizing, right? It shouldn't look like the other side. It shouldn't look like when you come in here, you're wearing something totally different than when you walk out there. It should be the same. Like I said, I was a Chiefs fan, and I still am a Royals fan. When they were losing, not just when they were winning, not just when I was getting what I wanted, even though I still think that they deserve to win that Super Bowl, right? It's not that. When they weren't even making the playoffs, I was still saying I'm a Chiefs fan. I wasn't trying to hide it, because I really was. I really am. Do we do the same thing when it comes to Jesus? And that's what you're going to see with Ezekiel. Even when they were apathetic, even when they wouldn't listen to this message, even when all of these things happened, he still was what he said he was. His life was a reflection of who he said he was. He didn't just walk into the presence of God and say, I love you, you're incredible, you're amazing. And then he turned around and everybody said, we're not going to be listening to you. And he said, yeah, I don't listen to that stuff either. I don't do that stuff either. It was just for when I was in his presence. It was just for when I was talking to him. It was just for when I was there on Sunday morning. It should be a lifestyle. This should just be an extension of how you live, not the pinnacle or a difference. This shouldn't, honestly, all this should be is just you going through life, and Sunday morning is just a part of it. When you guys all get to come together and look at each other and pray for each other, because you know for a fact that when you go back out there, you're still going to have to put on the same garb. You're still rooting for this. You're on the same team. Win or lose, whether they listen or they don't. Whether it feels like we're winning, whether it feels like we're losing, whether it feels like we're fighting an uphill battle, this is our commission. So, which leads us to the last one, which is Daniel. And I'm going to go ahead and just straight out of the gate give it to you, okay? Because this is just who, if I don't give it to you up front, I'm going to be explaining it the whole time and be like, see, this is what he was, okay? So in your outline, you have Jeremiah was a prophet, is a student of the Word of God, or of that is of God. Ezekiel, you have a prophet is a symbol of who God is. And now Daniel, you have a prophet is a speaker of who God is. So you have a student, a symbol, and a speaker. You can put the same thing down when it comes to disciples. We should be a student, a symbol, and a speaker. Daniel, the book of Daniel is prophetic as well as apocalyptic, okay? So meaning the end of the end times, right? So he was talking about how this is all going to wrap itself up, right? That's Daniel. Daniel actually has a point, and you guys sang a song today, which I wrote down one of the lyrics to, that says, I know how this story ends. Right? As disciples, as we look to God and we begin to follow God, we should not doubt one thing very specifically: how it ends. Right? We can doubt a lot of stuff in this world. I'm going to tell you, Caroline and I, when we were talking about the first, when we were talking about the teaching lesson that we were just before the message, right before I came up here. And we were talking about through this transition and through our lives, there's been many things that we've doubted, right? There's been ups and there's been downs. There's been some waxing and some waning. There's been some, oh man, I don't know if this is going to turn out right. But you know what? One thing that as Christians we should not ever doubt is how this thing ends. We should know for a fact how this ends. All the time. Yes. And that's where we should be going. That's what, honestly, I believe gave these guys the ability to continue to speak to apathetic people who didn't care, who weren't going to change, because they were like, guys, whether you listen or not, it's still the same outcome. I really hope you listen, because the outcome's not changing just because we don't want to hear it. The outcome's not going to change just because it makes me uncomfortable. The outcome's not going to change because the world wants it to. The outcome's not going to change just because we decide it doesn't look right for us. We all know how this ends. And my prayer is that we would be a student of God, because he's unchanging, that we would be a symbol of God. He's not going to change his colors, okay? It's not going to happen, right? He's not going to change who he is. We don't have to upgrade the new logo for Jesus. It's not going to happen, okay? We can, for multiple millennia, reflect the same thing that these guys did. And definitely, we should know what to say. And if you're wondering what to say, that's where we're going, and we're going to wrap up today with exactly what to say. So these guys had compassion, creativity, and they had courage. They had compassion, they had creativity, and they had courage. You saw it in each one of these guys. In fact, one of the things that you guys did today, and I asked you to, and I think it was Lisa. Lisa asked you to kind of give your guys' self a chance to, it was Nick who asked you guys to, it was somebody that wasn't me, all right? Somebody asked you to do this today, I promise. All right? I know you guys have done it, okay? You should have written it down or at least have it in your head. And that is, have a creative way that you're going to be teaching, right? Have some kind of a creative lesson that you're going to read scripture and be able to creatively teach it. As we go out, right, each one of us were gifted in different ways. I guarantee you that. Each one of us were gifted in different ways. I have just had a snapshot of Grace Community Church, and I'm going to guarantee you that the people that I've met, not a single one of you are the same when it comes to talents or when it comes to your passions or when it comes to those things in this world. However, one thing has stayed the same, and it's the number one thing that drew Caroline and I to you guys, and that is your passion for Christ. All right? So I know for a fact that you guys are at least passionate about one similar thing, which I'm very happy it's that one. But you all do it in different ways, which is beautiful. I'm so happy that we don't all do it the same way. I'm so happy. You have no idea how happy I am to be able to walk up to people and say, look, I don't know how you're going to share the gospel this week or who you're going to share the gospel with or how you're going to get them to listen or how you're going to get to love them, but I know you do. And please, please be praying about that way. Please be reflecting on that way, because my prayer is that you would be a student, keep studying, that you would be a symbol as you walk out there, and that you would be a speaker for him, which drives us to the New Testament. Numerous times throughout the New Testament, you're going to see, all throughout Acts and all throughout the Gospels, you're going to see just how much, right, just how much Jesus was encouraging his disciples to continue down this path of being students and speakers and symbols for him. But one of the last ways that he did this was found in Matthew 28:19. And I'm going to break this down as a walkout. Hopefully you can take this home. If you want to, flip over on the back of... Oh, no, you have a space for it. You're right at the bottom of this page. Or you can flip over if you want to and write it on the back, because I'm going to hopefully break this verse down for you, okay? Matthew 28:19-20 says, therefore, go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything that I have commanded you. So there's four huge breakdowns to this verse. The first one is, simple word, go. Go. Oftentimes, we feel as though we have to pray, should I share Christ with this person? Go. I wonder if they need Jesus. Go. Right? Right? Like, man, I really wonder if Jesus could do anything for them in their life. Go. That should definitely not be the prayer, is I wonder if they need Jesus. Everybody, right, exactly. So the first part of this is go. And we're going to see that also means, this term of go means as you are living. Okay, it doesn't mean that you need to go across the ocean. It doesn't mean that you have to go across the county border. It doesn't mean that you have to even literally go across the street. Some of you could just walk across your living room. Sit down and say, I need Jesus as bad as you do. And there's nothing that's more important, right? In fact, break every chain, right? Just like let this happen. Break down the walls. All of our disputes or our arguments or whatever. Okay, let's just put them all aside for one moment and just both agree we both need Jesus, all right? Let's just put that on the table, okay? So the first line of this is go. And I would hope that you would see that that is literally how Jesus started with his disciples. As you're living, make disciples. Disciples translates into students. Make students. Okay? What that looks like is exactly what's happening here. Now, some of you are saying, well, I'm never going to get up on that stage, so that's easy enough. Check. Don't have to do that. Right? That's not what he's talking about. Because go back to the first two-letter word. As you are living, go and teach. Every single person in this room has something to teach. Because we all know how this story ends. And we all know who sent us. And we all know his message, and we all know his love. And if we haven't experienced that, then one of two things has happened. Either we aren't a student, and we should be, and I pray that you are, or the opposite of that, we think we know it all. And if we think we know it all, normally that ends with us coming into these doors, shutting the doors, saying we did what we should have done, and leaving with a different symbol than what we came in with. So now, then, it says, baptizing them in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. I want to give you just a quick history for baptism. Baptism was simply to say, I agree with this message, right? That was us saying an outward expression that I agree with the message that was just spoken. So what that would mean is to go, meaning as you're living, teach others. And what are you supposed to teach them about? Jesus. That's the message. The gospel is the good news. Okay? So go as you're living, teaching people about the good news. Okay? And then we're going to wrap this up. This is honestly, hands down, one of the most important things that you can get out of, not that Jesus isn't the most important thing out of this verse, but the most important thing that most of us as Christians, we fail miserably at is that last line. Teaching them to obey. Not just yelling at them. Not just handing them a book. Not just putting your arm around them for a minute and saying, Jesus loves you. Those are great things. Those are not bad things. But teaching them to obey means, it doesn't say, as you are living, go and hand out pamphlets. Or as you are living, go and put your arm around somebody. Or as you are living, go and scream at somebody that's on the corner. Or as you are living, go ahead and just judge everyone that you come in contact with. It says, as you are living, make students, right? Make students of who? Jesus. And how do they do that? They obey what you've learned. His lessons right here. So as you're looking at what is a disciple or what is a prophet out of these big three that we covered today, they are students. If you are not a student of the word, be a student of the word. If you need encouragement, find somebody here. Find somebody around you who will encourage you to be a student of the word. Be a symbol. Do not stop pretending. It's not worth it. It's way too much stress. I promise you. It's way too much stress. Just drop it off. Stop pretending, okay? You're not hurting anybody's feelings. If you were to come up and be like, hey, for the last 20 years, I've been coming here, and I've been faking it the whole time. My hope is that we would embrace you with open arms and say, look, we knew it anyways, all right? We were waiting for you to say that, all right? And that we can embrace you in that moment and say, you know what? Let's pray. Let's go. Let's be students together. Let's do this together. So be a student, be a symbol, and then if we're alone or together, be a speaker, because we know how this ends, right? Let's pray. Dear Heavenly Father, God, I pray for who you are. God, I pray for this church. God, for the men and women that are here and the men and women that they're going to come in contact with this week. God, I pray that if they are not students, that they would be. God, ignite a fire under them. God, if they are symbolizing two things, God, I pray that one would fall. And I pray that the one that would fall is themselves. God, I pray that they would seek you, learn about you, be students of you, model you, and God, that they would only desire to speak of you. God, I pray for this week. As we're coming in and we're wrapping up the Old Testament next week, God, I pray that we can still see a thread of your truth, not just from an old history book of the Old Testament, but God, that you were the same yesterday, today, and forever. God, and we know how this ends. God, I pray these things in your Son's name. Amen.